Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the new normal. My name's Deborah Frances White, and this is the Guilty Feminists show on Instagram Live about life and feminism in lockdown. And today, my guest is the incredible Nikesh Shukla. He has a new book out called Brown Baby, but he writes books all the time. The thing about Nikesh is he writes so many books, I can't actually keep up with it. I don't know how he writes so many books. He's very talented. He's best known for compiling and also, of course, writing in The Good Immigrant, which was his idea and is an extraordinary collection of essays and stories from immigrants in Britain or people who are from immigrant families in Britain. And also there is now a USA edition, which is an immensely important piece of work and resource at this time, especially in a week like this. I mean, in a year like this, in a decade like this, in a racist system like this. So I'm very honoured to have him on the show today. I'm just waiting till we get a little bit more of a quorum because I don't want anyone to miss the beginning of Nikesh's new normal episode. There are new t-shirts going up every day. These t-shirts are print on demand and they're sourced locally, so there's no waste. So if you would like one, go and check them out. They're really brilliant. The merch store make them, and 100% of the profits go to the artist who ad-libbed the slogan. We find something that the artist has said that day that we think would make a good t-shirt, and Hannah from the merch store prints that up only if you order it. And the merch store take no profit, and neither does the Guilty Feminist. It goes straight to the artists. Many of the artists are comedians who live gig to gig, and so that money means a lot to them. There are some brilliant new ones coming up. Melissa Bravo's that says Sunday Soul Sesh. Siobhan McSweeney's that says we've just got to survive this. There are brilliant new ones, exciting ones. Ellen Jones is very popular, Big Gay Mess. There are lots and lots of popular ones. Bleak's Derek, also Susan McComa. So go and check them out. Go to guiltyfeminist.com, look at our merch, and you'll see the stay at home t-shirts, and they all have a quote and the name of the person who said it, the new normal and stay at home on them. They're really good fun, and you know where the money's going, right? Someone's saying that's amazing in the merch store. We think so. It was their idea. It was Hannah from the merch store's idea, and she watches the show every day to find something. But obviously, you can suggest something that the guest has said as well. Let's see if we can get Nikesh on. Now I've got a quorum. Okay. Let's see if he's there. I think he is. Yes. Going live with Nikesh in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There he is. And it worked. It doesn't always work.
How's it going?
Faffing around. It's going well today, Nikesh. And you could tell I'm a feminist, but I was slightly late, partly because I was putting on eyeliner because I just couldn't. I couldn't come on without any eyeliner. I was just like, I looked so bad. And I transformed myself in a such a short period of time. And I think we're all grateful I made the effort.
But also you're lying down to give the effect of nonchalance as well.
It's true. And it's also, there are only so many places in this flat that I find I can plug in and get reception at the same time. So if it's a plug in and get reception at the same time kind of day, I'm in bed. It's loose. It's in, this show should really be called In Bed with Deborah Frances White. That would be better. Looking back, I don't know why I called it the new normal. Looking back, how are you? How the hell are you? That's the first question of the new normal. How the hell are you, Nikesh?
This afternoon, I am good.
Yay!
It changes, but I've had a very lovely afternoon with my kids, hanging out and reading with them and doing boring parent-child stuff. And they
dad
weren't,
stuff, dad duty.
And they weren't assholes today. So, and also it meant that I had an afternoon away from the news and an afternoon away from working on scripts and books that will probably never see the light of day, but having the news sort of ticking away in the background. So I feel that.
Working in development while the news live streams is its own recipe for depression.
Yeah, it's.
But everything you write does seem to get published, though. You are a very prolific.
I think I have the semblance of being prolific. I think I basically.
No, you're actually prolific, babe. You look. How many books have you got?
I've done all right. Like, basically, I think after.
No, answer the question. How many books have you had published?
Oh, all right. I've had 3 novels, 2 books for teenagers, and I've edited 3 collections of essays.
That's 8. 8 books. Yes. I'm going to say you're prolific. I don't know anyone else with 8 books.
I know.
Unless they're old.
It's a
old
bit.
Old people.
Yeah.
Have 8 books.
Yeah. It's funny because I had I had a book coming out in September this year which I kind of wrote very very quickly and then we decided to push it back to February next year just because, like, obviously with bookshops being shut, loads of books are being pushed towards later on in the year, and so because it's a memoir and it's very personal, I was sort of gearing up to kind of talk about my life a lot, and now I've kind of got this sort of weird stay of execution where I'm sort of thinking, oh god, I've now got to wait an extra 6 months. But yeah, it's been like, basically since The Good Immigrant came out, things have just exploded, and I think I've always sort of had a good work ethic, because my mum was very work ethic orientated. Mm-hmm. And I had a couple of things that I'd been working on for a while, because I finished my second novel I finished it in 2013 and it came out in 2014, and then The Good Immigrant came out in 2016, but I was already working on things in between 2013 and 2018 when like a bunch of things came out. So I think I've got 8 fucking books out. I don't know why I'm downplaying it. Yeah, I'm amazing.
Exactly. Thank you. Absolutely. I mean, imagine a white man with 8 books on the shelves in Waterstones would be unbearable. Unbearable, I'm telling you. 8 books, it's not nothing. Tell us about your, this is not normally where we go, but I'm going there just because I can. It's my show, fuck it. Tell us about your latest book.
So, yeah, the next one to come out is called Brown Baby, and it's a memoir, weirdly. So, I became a dad in 2014, and not that it was anything special, and like we hadn't planned to have kids, but then we did what people do and got drunk at Christmas one year. I wrote a column for The Observer for about 6 months where I was the remit was to kind of write about parenting but also try and focus on like how you bring a child up in a world that seems so bleak. And so a lot of the stories that I was writing about were like having difficult conversations with my kid about climate change or about racism or about gender and so on and so forth, and how I kind of navigate those conversations and how I kind of had to skill up, I had to learn how to talk to my kid. And an editor approached me and said, is there a book version of this? And I was a bit like, I really want to write a memoir. I'm like, I'm not that interesting. Like, I haven't, my parents, like, the way I've raised my children isn't particularly interesting. But we talked about it, and the book ended up being essentially about grief and about raising a child through a period of grief. My mum died 10 years ago, and it was a very significant death, and that was very unexpected. It was very sad, and I was very close to I was emotionally very close to my mum. And not having her around when my kid was growing up was really hard for me. And she, that all of the questions that I was sort of floundering around trying to answer, she would have been the one who would have been able to go, "Look, darling," and explain stuff to me. And so the book kind of became, it became a book about grief, basically. So, yeah, it's called Brown Baby, a memoir of race, family, and home. And yeah, it's out next
Oh, I can't wait. I can't. Well, I don't need to wait till it comes out because I have a copy, which I'm starting in lockdown. And but I can't wait till everyone can read it and we can kind of talk about it more. And it's but it has been put off till Feb.
Yes, yeah.
So it's good to put it off till Feb because you want people to pick it up with the cash register at Waterstones, which they can't do if they're not allowed into Waterstones.
Yeah, and I think a lot of books that were supposed to come out in summer are being pushed to the autumn, and I think, people aren't automatically going to have a huge amount of disposable income to spend on all of the books that they could have been reading between March this year and September. So, like, let's space it out and, make space
Yeah,
for.
I mean, if James Bond isn't coming out, I don't think you should bother.
You know what? That is just so. I mean, I can't believe I have to wait another year for the next Fast and Furious installment. I'm
I
actually really.
mean, I think you've declared yourself as the real victim of this global pandemic there.
I know. I mean, if Vin Diesel wants to slip me a pirate copy just so I can know that the family is still together in the Fast and Furious films, I would be very happy.
He's a big Guilty Feminist fan, so I can only imagine he's watching this live or will watch it on YouTube sometime in the next few days. Vin just loves every time he WhatsApps me, he's all, "Oh, I'm a feminist, but I make the Fast and the Furious." Doesn't really engage with women very much. He says stuff like that to me all the time. All the time. He's like, "What more can I do for the cause of women?" Vin Diesel says. And I say, "Vin, you're doing enough. You're doing your bit." You know, he does. He lives for it. Can I ask you, do you have any strategies for staying emotionally or mentally stable during this pandemic?
Yes. Yeah, so I think what I've been doing is applying how I write to the rest of my day, which is 45 minutes on, 50 minutes off. And I'm finding that's really helping. I'm also finding that the Freedom app is really good. And for those of you who don't know, the Freedom app basically can either block your internet or block your social media. And it
Oh, cool.
also and you set how long you want it to be off for. But here's the cool thing about it. Being a writer, I spend a lot of time in cafes, and
You used to.
or I used to spend a lot of time in cafes, and the Freedom app has a little function that allows you to play coffee shop noises
Oh,
right
nice.
at home. So I think restricting my news intake is really important. I mean, obviously in the last 5 days it's been incredibly hard. I think like everyone, I've been incredibly angry about, this Dominic Cummings story, and mostly sad for people who, I had an uncle in my extended family die, and I attended his funeral on webcam, and I attended the prayers for him on Zoom, and I just feel for all the people who were in the inner circle, and like who were the immediate family, and everyone who's lost someone who has had to kind of grieve online while he gets to test. Well, I mean, like, now's not the time to talk about politics, but
Oh no, it is. You can talk about anything on this show. We talked about people are saying don't rustle or nothing in the mic. I do the show every day and I'm doing it exactly the same way that I've been doing it. So I don't know that it's my mic. Is your mic near anything rustly?
It might just be me shifting about, because
No, is that something you did then? Oh, no, it's back again. It's sort of like a like wind near the. It's like, you know, when you're talking to someone on the phone and they're outside in the wind.
I tell you what, I'm going to close the window.
Hey! Yeah, no, I mean, it's absolutely fun. The whole point of this show is you can talk about what's affecting you in lockdown. And of course, Dominic Cummings being Dominic Cummings and being feeling he's above it and he can set the law for the proles and do what he wants is angering everybody. Yeah. And apparently the police are saying it's harder to get people to do what they're meant to be doing now because people are, not that I'm a fan of the police at the moment, but that people are just going, well, why should I? And that is absolutely not the attitude you should. Dominic Cummings isn't going to be the one who's punished if we all act the way we want to. He's not the one that's going to die. So, you know, we can't punish Dominic Cummings by behaving as he behaved, but it does feel devastating that some people have missed family funerals, have missed really important occasions. You know, people that's like, I wasn't there for my dad's 75th birthday or similar. You know, I think it just feels kind of devastating. Yeah, I know the noise is back, but I don't think we know what is causing it. So I think we might just have to suffer through it. It's something rustling, but I don't know what it is. I can hear it too. Can you hear it, Nikesh? Stopped now. Oh, there it starts again. Could just be feedback, I think. Yeah, maybe it's feedback. I think it might be feedback.
I've got you up quite loud, so maybe I'll just...
Maybe that's it. Could be feedback. We could do headphones. I don't know that I can do headphones, actually, because I can only plug my headphones in if I take my battery out. Not my battery, my cord out. We can hear you fine. Okay, they can hear us. It's okay. Everyone's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's been an interesting... I think the period of lockdown has been an interesting stress test for the idea that we're all in this together. We're all in this global pandemic together. And I think at various points I've felt very sad about how we're not all in this together, and it's been a very exposing time about social inequality within this country, within other countries. And I think he just he represents the greatest lie that that this country tells about itself, that it's a meritocracy, and you know, like and also we have a government that really wants to strip away elitism from politics and all the rest of it. But the very fact that he did commit a minor breach of lockdown rules, according to the police, and they're not going to press charges. It just sort of proves that he is an elite.
Yeah.
And it's bonkers.
And nearly all of the people who have actually been fined for lockdown breaches are Black and Asian.
Yeah.
It's just, and then when you look at what's happening in America, it's so shocking. It's so, and yet it isn't. Like, I feel like I'm going to do an op-ed piece, Nikesh, about this, about when Me Too happened, so many men went, we're so shocked, we're so surprised. And I'm like, are you though? You have not been paying attention. You have not been... Or you've blocked it yourself. You've like, I don't really want to see what this guy's doing. I don't want to see, you look down when a woman looks at you to kind of stop this behavior or ally, or you're looking away and you're walking out of the room and you're trying not to see it. You're lying to yourself or you're lying to us. Mm. And that's how I feel about white women now. I feel like, are white women going to step up and go, we all weaponize our tears. We all act vulnerable at times to get away with stuff, to get extra. We've all done it. Because white women are the least likely group to be criminalized in the whole world. Now, we've not all turned that as a weapon onto a black or brown man at the risk of his safety or his freedom or his life. But we all understand we could. And we then must accept that we have power that is ill-gotten, that is projected upon us by society. And we must accept the responsibility the way we ask men to. I asked all men to step up at that point, and it is no good going, oh, it's so shocking, I'm so surprised. So are you though? You're not really, are you? If you think about it, you can see what your power and your influence is, and you can see how quickly it can be inflicted upon the wrong people who are going to be punished for your behavior. And if you won't think about it, you don't want to. And if you will think about it, then you have to admit this is what's happening. Mm. And I feel like we, someone's saying so many women also seem shocked, but I don't, we just can't ask men to close the power gap that they need to close while we go, we don't have any power. We're just sad little victims and we're very vulnerable. Like, it's no good. We do have power. We have great power. And we've got to start. The first step is to acknowledge we have power, which white women do not want to do. And we're just going to have to start, like, demanding that we do, like, asking each other to admit it the way we wanted men to.
A couple of days ago, I'm not going to go into the specifics of it because I deleted the tweets because they blew up a lot more than I anticipated them. You know, when you just fling out a tweet, you go and do something else and you come back and you're like, oh God.
Shit. Yeah. I've set fire to Twitter. I left a candle on Twitter and now it's on fire.
I tweeted about a rejection for a project that I was working on that came in this week that was a very racist rejection. And the tweets went far and I ended up deleting them because they had potential blowback on a young person of colour who works in the industry who had told me, who had passed on this information to me about why this script wasn't going forward. And I didn't want them, I don't mind being a loudmouth when it affects me, but when it affects other people, I don't want that on my conscience. But what was interesting about the thing, because it was very much a thing about stuff that happens in TV, was that I had very prominent actors and writers and directors of color kind of sharing their own stories and going, yeah, this has happened to me and this is horrible. And I had loads of like secret messages from my white friends who work in TV kind of going, I'm very surprised, I'm really shocked that this has happened. I'm really like, did this really happen? I'm really shocked. And
was this your tweet about saying, just to be clear, was this your tweet saying it was like an Asian every teen, it was like, we've got all our Asian shows, thanks very much, was it about that?
Yeah
And white people were saying they were shocked.
Yeah, and I thought, but you've been in those rooms and it is interesting, because I think there is a level to which when we are, you know, when we are sort of like, if there was a room full of just men and something happens and like the men who sort of feel a little bit uncomfortable with how a situation is has unfurled would sort of like raise their eyebrows but not say anything, but then be surprised. But they're the ones who tend to be surprised when someone points out that it's really messed up, and they're like, oh, and it's sort of like a weird defensive thing, because you're like, oh my God, am I thus a misogynist by association? And it's the same sort of thing, like me kind of pointing out this racism and going, this is racist. I think my white friends are probably going, oh God, have I been party to racism and just sort of accepted this as like a casual thing that's said and said in the industry, like it's okay. And I think it's because like, it is hard to call out all of this stuff. And I only sort of probably have the position I do to kind of call out this stuff because I took a leap of faith like 5 or 6 years ago and just said the thing. And then once I've said the thing, I can go on to kind of say things. I've already burnt all the bridges I'm going to burn. So I understand for people that
it's same, same. I feel the same in terms of the feminist stuff. It's like once you start saying it, once you start saying this structure of comedy, the structure of what narrative stories are is inherently sexist. And it constantly marginalizes female voices. And once you've said that, and then you talk about those other intersect, like only the people that really wanted to commission you are going to commission you anyway. You might as well say what you want to say at that point. Yeah. And I mean, I think you are probably braver than I am usually.
I don't know about that. I don't know. I don't feel brave. I feel like probably a bit of me is like, well, I've pissed off all the people I'm going to piss off. So, you know.
Yeah. Double down.
Double down, much like our prime minister. But I don't know how you feel about this, but I think a pragmatic part of me probably thinks it's a good way of ensuring you don't end up working with dicks.
True.
I mean, I still probably end up working with dicks, but like, it's a good filter mechanism for like ensuring you don't work with dicks.
Yeah. I think that's actually a good call. Like, did you want to work with them anyway if they're going to be like, but that thing of white people going, oh, I'm so surprised that that anybody said, oh, we have enough Asian stories. The thing is, the reason I'm not surprised by that at all, in fact, I think it's more than plausible. It's completely expected for me, is because for years we've already got a female driven project on the channel. And I used to say to them, and how many male driven projects have you got? Because I'd like to know, because, well, if you have, you only got one male one and one female one, in which case you've only got two projects, then I'm fine with it.
Deborah, we had Smack the Pony 10 years ago. Like, what more do you want?
What more do you want? We've had Goodness Gracious Me. And I think that really said, that was the final word on Asian comedy. Yeah, yeah. It's sort of like stuff like, I had that once, the last word. I think so-and-so had the last word on that. And I'm like, the last word 10 years ago, but the climate's changed. What? And also, there are young women now who wouldn't kind of see it. So it's completely expected for me. I would say, I mean, the thing is, women have come into vogue. We're having a moment. God knows how long it's going to last. And there's certainly more appetite for diversity than there was overall. But even within that, to even now be saying, we've got our Asian project set up. It's like, why can't it be a teen? This isn't an Asian project. This is a teen project.
Yeah.
But that's how they have to start seeing it. Is this the best teen project we could have? In which case, the Asianness is, well, of course, there'll be a filtered lens, but the Asianness is not going to stop teenagers of all races enjoying it.
But I think that this is the problem with the diversity and inclusion conversation, because I think people think it's for me, you know, like I need to see that representation. But I often think that actually, I've spent years putting myself having myself, my mirror be like Ross Geller or like any other umpteen billion white guys, so you know my imagination's pretty good. But what we have is a generation of men who, like, and I use this example quite a lot, like there were men on the internet who were so furious about this is what their petition was called, the Lady Ghostbusters film, that they were willing to suspend their disbelief enough for a world that, where ghosts need busting, but they can suspend their disbelief enough for the thought that four women could do it. And I thought, they need diversity more than me, because because like the coming of age story is white, the Asian coming of age story is the Asian story. And ultimately it just comes down to a lack of imagination, I think. You know,
please, I've interrupted you and it's your show.
We're in the make-believe world, you know, where our make-believe can be mirrors and they can be windows, but we're in the make-believe world. And if people if people lack the imagination to picture a Black James Bond or, you know,
Doctor Who.
Yeah. And all the rest of it. I can't remember which Doctor Who it was. I think it was Peter Davidson, maybe. But when Jodie Whittaker was announced as the new Doctor Who, he said that he was really sad that this meant there was going to be one fewer role model for men, for boys. And I thought, but why can't Jodie Whittaker be a role model for boys? I don't understand. Like, I don't... Also, when do... teenage girls or, you know, young girls get to have a female role model and so on and so forth.
Well, I think that's more the question. And I think Peter was quite sorry he said that, but I think that's the question. Is the male role model is the default role model. The female role model is the female role model. So generations of girls have read Harry Potter, and nobody questioned that Harry Potter was their role model. And there was some representation there with Hermione. End of story. Like, you know, and nearly all of the characters in those books are male. And there's some, the female characters are the sort of side characters. No one questions that, but The Worst Witch is only for girls. And it's always that way. And that is why we lack empathy for, as a whole society, we lack empathy for women. Women lack empathy for women as well. We're much more likely to tear down women, or if a female prime minister does, I mean, this country, we've only had two female prime ministers, and, you know, neither was any one that I would have empathy for. But do you know what I mean? Like when Julia Gillard was in power in Australia or whatever, the quickness to cast stones at women. Hollywood has done a great disservice, because that's how we build empathy, is through story. So we've all got masses of empathy for white men. Because we've seen them struggle, and we've seen them do everything, and we've felt all their feelings all our lives. And the reason that we need that the Asian teenage every man story, every man, every boy story, every girl story, whatever, is because it's incredibly important for white people, who are the dominant group, to learn compassion and empathy, and also just sort of humanity. Like, oh, I'm a human being, you're a human being. Like that's it. And to stop sort of looking at it as Asian or just you're the hero of my story. Yeah. I'm looking at it through your eyes. I will now be able to look through the eyes of the person on the bus sitting opposite me. That's why it's so important, apart from also being important representation for young Asian kids, and you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of people get hung up on the specificity as well. You know, like if you have an Asian kid in a certain household eating a certain type of food, but having that every teenager's trials and tribulations, and I think it's that sort of like that surface aesthetic of it being in an Asian household with quite Asian-y things that make people go, oh, this is a very Asian thing. But when I think about the specific, like when I was growing up, like I watched countless American shows, and at no point did anyone in any of those shows sit down and explain what homecoming was. But I am culturally aware what a homecoming dance is, mm-hmm. or what a prom is, or what Twinkies are. Mm-hmm. If you're a good storyteller, you find the universal in the specific. That's what our job is. You know, mm-hmm. that's what makes us good at what we do. And it's just a shame. Like, and also, like, name me one British Asian sitcom that's on TV right now. Man Like Mo Bean. But that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and even most ancient, you know, sort of the archaic children's stories, the Once Upon a Times, they're so often about princesses and royalty and castles. And again, I mean, you don't have to have grown up in a castle to get all the specificity of those things. It's very other, actually. It's very other. Nearly no child reading that has a turret. I mean, and yet, we just kind of accept it. We just see the picture and we think, well, that must be a turret, I guess. And she's letting her hair down. And I guess, you know, it's so specific. Everything's specific. If it's any good, and we absolutely don't need to understand every reference. We'll learn the references.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Is there anything about the lockdown, Nikesh, that surprised you, the way you've responded or anybody else has responded to this? Humanity has responded?
What I've really enjoyed has been getting to know my street and getting to know the people on my street. And it's made me realise that for as long as I've lived in this house, which is, I'm going on 10 years, I've lived in this place, given that like half my life I'm required to go to London, I live in Bristol, I spend a lot of time outside of this house and thus outside of this community. But actually on my street, like, you know, we may not all have the same political views. We may not view the government in the same way. We may not even be experiencing the same pandemic, but we all want our street to be a nice and safe place for us all to live. And getting to know people on my street has been really interesting and really, really nice, I think.
It's bizarre, it's taken a lockdown for us to get to know our neighbours, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. Like the thing that we were told, which is you're now not allowed to talk to anyone. It's sort of like, oh, well, now I kind of need to be connected to all these people in case anyone needs something. It's a very odd thing that that it's taken this. Do you think you will keep that up?
I really hope so. I really hope that this sort of signals a fundamental change for me, because I've also recognised that it's actually really nice to prepare three meals for yourself rather than like take the easy way out. It's really like I don't actually need to spend that much money. I can be alone with my own thoughts. I don't have to constantly be listening to a podcast or watching something. Like, I spend a lot of time like walking or taking trains and all the rest of it, and I'm always like listening to stuff or watching stuff or reading stuff, and I can be alone with my own thoughts. That's okay. And actually, like, the more I allow thoughts to sit, the deeper I think about them, which I don't feel like I've done since I was a teenager, when I didn't have the internet and like I just had to think one thing and like spiral into the depths of it in my bedroom while listening to Radiohead.
I'm not ill, by the way. I've just got some hay fever. If I sneeze, because it's very hay fevery weather, I think, oh my God, everyone's going to think I'm ill, and then I'm giving them corona over Instavirus. My God, I'm sorry. That's interesting about you've not been alone with your thoughts since you were a teenager, because since then the internet has filled in all the gaps.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I'm probably the same.
Yeah.
We do fill in the gaps too much now. Let the mind run. I find if I've been working on a script and I don't know the answers or I can't see the wood for the trees, then I go and exercise. I just suddenly, it just comes. I go, oh, there's a connection. I've been doing personal training, and sometimes I have to say to my person on Zoom, I say to my personal trainer, I'm really, really sorry, I've just got to record this, and I'll pick up my phone and I'll voice note. That scene should be in her office and she should be doing this, and that's when he realizes and blah, 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 and I just record a whole heap of things, otherwise they might go. And I'm like, I'm really sorry. I know I'm meant to be in the middle of 25 squats or something, but I have to. She's like, no, it's good. Get it down. The big script I was working on that I've told you about, Kesh, is I solved so many of the problems when I was doing something else. And it's just when your brain can just make those connections. And I can't be listening to something else while I'm exercising. I mean, I can listen to music, but I need to just sit with myself more often. How have you managed to do that during lockdown?
I'm a professional insomniac. So I've just been sort of sitting and like thinking, or sitting like, you know, like it sounds so wanky, but just sort of lying in bed staring at the ceiling and just sort of sitting with things rather than like doing everything I can to sort of force myself to go to sleep. And it's been nice. I really, really miss my dad, and I really, really miss my sisters. And that has been, like, I don't live in the same city.
It feels like you're not following your familial instincts enough. Could you get your dad to follow his fathering instincts and take you to Durham? These are the suggestions. I mean, if your instinct's telling you you should be with your dad, I'm questioning why you're not.
I think I'm going to wait for him to get coronavirus, and then we will just go. We'll just go and hole up in a caravan together.
I mean,
maybe
the whole thing is stop following your. You don't need an announcement to say follow your instincts. That's what we were all doing before. The announcement is very specifically: don't follow your instincts. Follow these laws.
Yeah.
I mean, anyway, so you miss your dad. Can I ask? When we get out of this, if you could do anything, suddenly if they said everything's back to normal, we've just sort of misted a vaccine down, everything's back to normal, you can do anything you want, what would you do first?
Oh, God. I go for a swim.
Ah, that's nice.
Go for a swim.
Did you swim a lot before?
No, but I just thought I want to go and see the sea, and I want to go and commune with the sea, I think, and swim. I find the sea quite calming. The question I've been asking people, and I guess I can ask you this, is if I gave you £100 voucher, specifically £100 voucher, so you don't just go, oh, I'll go to a fancy meal, and you can spend it guilt free, what meal are you going to go and get?
Dishoom. Do you know Dishoom?
Yeah.
I don't know if they have a Dishoom in Bristol.
They don't, but it's very close to my heart.
It's very, very, very delicious. And it was the last meal we had before lockdown. Before we realised we should not be going out. And they were delivering for a while as well. And I was really excited. I thought, well, they're going to deliver all through lockdown. No, they didn't. They delivered for 1 week, in which time I had it once, because I thought they were going to deliver forever. And it turns out, no. I'm hoping. I just heard the sad news that Valens is not going to be reopening. They're auctioning all of their properties off, and it's such a hallmark of the queer community in Soho. Valens,
that's sad.
Been there since I think the 70s. Valens opened, and then they have, you know, they just opened more properties. But we used to go to Valens West after our impro show in Earls Court every single week. That was our thing. We all went for a late night at Valens West. And then sort of, you know, hangover breakfast in Soho and, you know, I don't know. I just think, yeah, that's quite sad. But I think I would go to Dishoom. But also, I do love Rocker. But that's quite fancy. But I could eat there for £100. I mean, I'm very delighted by, I'm delighted by that budget. I think that's a good budget. That's a strong budget.
Yeah. I teeter between there's a dosa place just by Euston Station that people in my family have been going to since the 60s, and there's nothing special, but it's just like the cheers of dosa places. I really love that place. There's a fish and chips restaurant in just outside of Lyme Regis in Dorset where there's like. The restaurant is mostly outdoors and it spills onto the beach, and like it's one of those places where it's like the floor is sand. I think I just want to go to the seaside.
Well, you are allowed to drive now. You could drive to Weston-super-Mare from Bristol pretty easily with your kids and get out and run around on the beach for a bit. You're allowed to do that. I think you should do that.
I think I'm going to.
I think you should. That's not against the law, and I don't think it's not dangerous either. Not against the law in this country at the moment is not a useful metric. But you are, from Monday, allowed to meet 5 people outdoors if you have a garden. Someone's saying, no, Weston has a higher number now. Okay.
Yeah, all right. So
don't go to Weston.
Well, Weston is the nearest beach to us. That's my friend Hillary, who lives down the road. We were going to go to the seaside there the other day, and we We were sort of looking online, and they'd shut all the car parks because there'd been this spike in cases at the hospital, and they weren't accepting new patients in Western Hospital. It just sounds like the government really want everyone to be talking about Dominic Cummings, and they really want businesses to be making money again. And so it's like, rush the re-entry of the country. Mm-hmm. And
I think the quicker they think now, because Dominic Cummings' story isn't going away, because journalists have all got families, they forgot about that. And the journalists are angry because they also obeyed this. So I think that it will hang around. And I think by doing things like going, but it's fine because we can all see six people now, is probably a way of them going, if giving us a treat because we feel ripped off. And I think, I don't know if it's safe, but okay, look, people are suggesting other beaches for you to go to that isn't Weston-super-Mare. But I do think maybe if you can go to a quiet beach and get, I mean, it's not dangerous if you're not staying away from people, and it sounds like you need it.
It definitely feels like, little Mickey, can you sit in this car and eat this ice cream while Daddy goes into this motel and bangs his secretary for half an hour?
Oh, wow. That's your T-shirt. That's your T-shirt sorted. I cannot think that Hannah from the merch store is going to see anything better than that. Dominic Cummings is the equivalent. The Cummings gate is the equivalent of little Mickey in the car with an ice cream while Daddy bangs his secretary in a motel. And I don't care, Hannah, if you have to use the front and the back of the T-shirt for that. That's a stayer. Wow.
Can you tell I felt Mickey, very...
We are little Mickey in the car, and frankly, I don't even feel I got the fucking ice cream. I'd be thrilled if the government gave us all a Mr. Whippy at this point. I'd say, well, is that something? Can you tell us, is there a piece of activism you'd like us to help you with this week? Anything we can follow, amplify, sign, donate to, if we have the money?
God, there's so many things, isn't there? I guess most on my mind at the moment is thinking about what I can do within my community, my immediate circle, to address anti-blackness, especially what's going on with George Floyd and what's going on in America. So call out your racist uncles and aunties and mums and dads, I guess. In terms of anything, God, you sent me this earlier, and then I was like, I better do some research this afternoon. But I ended up having a very lovely afternoon with my children, and I forgot to do some.
That's totally fine. If you want to come up with something later and make a story, we can share the story. So you're going to come up with some kind of race-related, anything we can follow. It could be a charity, it could be a foundation, it could be a petition to sign, it could be some resources we can read. I've been sharing some resources that have been going around just generally for white people to educate ourselves better and do the work that Hollywood has not done by reading and listening and thinking just to more voices, because we're not exposed to those voices in if we just follow the path. So if there's anything like that you would like to share, please share the story and at The Guilty Feminist, and we'll share it.
Definitely.
Is there anything you've been watching or reading that you think we should watch or read?
This is a really good time to plug. So I judged the prize called the Jullock Prize, which is awards the best book by a British writer of colour in the last year. And we announced our winner this week, and it was Afropean by Johnny Pitts. Wow. African Notes from Black Europe, and it's a really wonderful
great title.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's a
what
really
a great title
travel memoir about different Black communities in Europe, and it does that thing that I think you and I have spoken about in the past. It's just that really delicate thing of making sure stories aren't lost by recording them somewhere. It's a wonderful act of archiving, and you know, in a world where we're trying, like, certain forces are trying to make it smaller, this is just a really big open-armed project, and it's just come out in paperback, so it's cheaper than it was a month ago.
Can you make a story of that? Can you take a picture of that book and make a story?
Yeah,
and definitely. I'll do a swipe up so people can buy it from Blackwell's.
Yeah, definitely. What have I been watching? I've been rewatching New Girl on Netflix because it's very easy watching.
Yeah.
But I've also really been enjoying, God, you know when someone goes, name your 10 favourite films right now, and then you're like, I have never seen a film ever. I read another book that I really loved is Notes from the Apocalypse by Mark O'Connell, which is, it's almost John Ronson-esque. It's like a really funny book, exploration of people who are preparing for the end of the world. So he goes and meets people who trade in Cold War bunkers, people who are survivalists, people who are uploading their brains to different bits of technology. And it's really wonderful and weird. And also, if you want something funny and frivolous but also really brilliant, Wow No Thank You by Samantha Irby, who I think is one of the funniest essayists around.
I like the look of those. Please make stories of those because I want to share them.
Yes,
and I actually want to read them.
I can't think of anything I've watched. I've watched lots of really good TV, but it's all gone out of my brain.
I've just started The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which people have been demanding I watch for ages, and I've continued not to, but I have started enjoying it. And also, if you can get it here, I think it's on Sky here, but it's also on Hulu. The story of the 1970s women's rights movement, Mrs. America, is incredible, genuinely incredible. And it's sort of, I won't say any more about it. Those are my recommendations for today.
Can I say one thing about Miss Maisel? Sorry.
Yeah, please.
Which I'm a really big fan of it. And yesterday I found the original script that she wrote before it went into production, the original script. I found it on a site called The Script Lab and read it. And it is such a brilliantly written script. I'll send it to you if you want to read it. It's so brilliantly written. And it just sort of made me think a lot about how to write scripts.
Wonderful. The answer to how do I keep up with my reading list from Sophie there is I don't. I'm going to show you something horrifying now. These are the feminist... Oh, I've just pulled the cord out. These are the feminist books that I have been sent lately. This is the pile next to my bed. And it's genuinely horrifying. Let me see if I can turn around. Hold on. There you go.
Wow.
It's terrifying. And the thing is, I just don't read enough because I'm always on my phone and I'm always writing and I'm always making podcasts and stuff. And I find it really hard because you've got to settle into a book. And you sort of getting a snatch of 10 pages here and 10 pages there. Getting a Snatch is, of course, the name of my next book. I find it very, very difficult. But I do try. And it's more, I tend to read a little bit of a lot of books. I really wish that I read the whole of more books. And that is a goal for 2020. But 2020 is not a time to making goals. It's a time to survive. What was the other thing I was going to ask? Oh, is there anything else of yours that we should be looking at? Again, you can make stories of these things. Anything that you think is a hidden gems. Saying it's not even tidy. Don't tidy shame me during lockdown. I will not be tidy shamed right now. I will not. Do you know the hours I'm working right now without my normal go-to plugins like seeing other human beings? If I could make eye contact with somebody who wasn't my husband or one of my cats, I would come home and tidy. But as that is not a fucking option for me, that pile will remain like that. And I'm so sorry if you're a tidy person. And if that's triggering for you, I apologise, but not really. Anything else of yours that we should be watching or looking at, not watching, like reading or looking at or following? Or
I mean, go to Amazon and read the blurbs of all of the books and just pick the one you think you might like.
Great.
Can I suggest
you go to Blackwell's, not Amazon?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I just feel like Bezos has enough during this lockdown.
Oh no, you read the blurbs on Amazon and then go to your seller of choice. But a project that I did do, so about a month ago when lockdown first started, a brilliant actor called Sacha Dhawan, who, if you're a Doctor Who fan, he's currently the master on Doctor Who. He had come to a theatre festival that I'd written a monologue for called My White Best Friend. And he wanted to collaborate on this project called Virtual Collaborators, where I wrote a monologue. A brilliant director called Millie Bhatia directed it and he performed it. And we spoke a lot for about 3 weeks, and then we settled on the idea of someone doing a live stream for the first time, and what we ended up with was a stand-up comedian does a live stream for the first time, and with the absence of laughter, with the absence of the atmosphere of being in a club, they kind of start to crumble emotionally. And we did this monologue. It came out like 2 weeks ago. It's like 9 minutes for your time. If you go to YouTube, it's called Yash Gill's Power Half Hour. And it's
again, it can was you make such... a story, because we will not remember that. Sorry to all make right. you make all these stories.
No, don't worry. I need to promote it a bit more, but it was a really lovely thing to work on, right. And it really kept me going at the start of lockdown, because it was so emergent and fun to do.
Can I just say that I'm doing for Amnesty International The Secret Policeman Unlocked, and we've got two next week. We've already recorded one. Is Siobhan McSweeney, who plays Sister Michael in Derry Girls, and Juliet Stevenson talking about doing the Four Yorkshire Women as opposed to the Four Yorkshire Men. And the other is a very special reunion of the Goodness Gracious Me cast, talking about Going for an English, along with Nish Kumar, who was one of the actors who recreated it on the Secret Policeman's tour in Edinburgh.
I was there.
Yes, we were there.
That's where we met for the first time in real life.
I'd forgotten. You're right. So we've already recorded the reunion, but there's going to be like clips from both the sketch at the Secret Policeman's Ball at Wembley Arena that the original cast did, and audio clips of the one we did in Edinburgh with Kulvinda and Nish and Sindhu and Bisha K. Ali and Himesh Patel. And then we'll have a live Q&A. This is Wednesday night next week. I'll make stories. I'll put it on the socials. But there'll be a live Q&A so you can ask questions. And we recorded it just last week. And they said, oh, Scott, this is the first time we've been together in the same room for years. And I was like, you're not in the same room. But it felt like we were. It was really, really moving and very, very funny. And I got to host it. I can't even believe it. It felt like such a privilege. And I'd like to think, why the hell have I got to host that? But it's only because I'm doing The Secret Policeman that I did. And I feel very, very, very privileged to have done that. So both of those are coming out next week. And there is a Q&A with the original Goodness Gracious Me cast after we released the Going for an English one. So please, please, please tune in for that. Check it out on our socials. And I am now, as it's 7 o'clock, on the Mary Beard Culture Lockdown show on BBC Two. So if you'd like to double screen me at the moment, tune into BBC Two. Otherwise, watch it on iPlayer. And I'm talking about Risk. Martin Scorsese is also on tonight. He's very excited about being on the same show as me. We weren't together, just to be clear.
Is his segment 4 hours long?
His segment is entirely unedited. I don't think I'll get any airtime at all. I can't imagine. I was on with a doctor of risk called David from Cambridge University. I was not on with Martin Scorsese, but I'm very excited to be sharing a bill with him. And he's just WhatsApped me now saying he can't wait. Nikesh, is anything about this whole experience given you any renewed hope in humanity? Do you find any of this? Are you thinking maybe we'll turn this around environment-wise, that we've proven we can keep planes out of the sky? Empathy wise, that maybe now we might empathize with refugees more now that we've had a sudden change inflicted on us that wasn't our fault and, you know, it's hard to cope with. Is there anything that gives you hope?
Yes. I think that during pandemic, there have been some really big conversations about social inequality that I think have been hitting harder, because I think people have been we've all been in it together, but I think people have slowly been realizing that because of systems, because of institutions, we're not. And I'm really hopeful that that's going to result in some big, difficult conversations in the years to come. And also, don't vote Tory, guys. Come on.
Come on. My friend Fatima Mawaz in Australia.
I just got a call from Nish Kumar, of all people, probably going, hey, I'm watching you on Instagram Live. I just wanted to check it was live.
Oh, okay, probably. He's probably, because we've mentioned him. It's a bit like Beetlejuice. I mentioned him 3 times, so he was summoned. I can't remember what I was going to say now. My friend Fatima Mawaz made an Instagram story. And I don't know if it was hers or she was showing a meme, but I think it might have been hers, where she said, we're all in the same storm. We're not all in the same boat. Mm. And I think it's a great way of putting it. You could be on a tiny raft, or you could have no boat at all, or you can be on some magnificent ocean liner and hardly notice it. And I think that's what we have to remember. And we're going to need a bigger boat.
I'd love to be on the sea.
Sorry, I've mentioned the ocean again. And I know that's a particular trigger for you. And I apologise. Nikesh, we're going to get cut off in a second because Instagram cuts you off after an hour. So I just want to say thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure and a privilege to have you. Is there anything else you want to say quickly so you get the T-shirt you want? Or anything else you didn't tell us that you think we should know?
Thank you so much for doing this. You're brilliant. And this was fun to do.
I've got a new manifestation of a project coming up I want to talk to you about, but I'll tell you offline after you've talked to Nish Kumar. Nikesh Shukla, thank you so much. Tomorrow we have Jamie Lee, who plays Michelle on Derry Girls. So tune in 6 p.m. tomorrow for the new normal, and you will be able to see she's a live wire. She did the last Secret Policeman's tour, and along with various other Derry Girls, we did a Derry Girls sketch. Derry Girls Learn About Human Rights from Sister Michael, which was absolutely hysterical. And she's one of my favourite people. So tune in tomorrow at 6 o'clock for that. And everyone say bye-bye, Nikesh. Thank you so much. You've been wonderful. Thank you for telling us about your life in lockdown. It's been marvellous. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.